inflation, how bad could it get, what might people want to do. Well, hello there, my friends. Chris Marcus here with you for Arcady Economics, and glad to be joined by everyone watching at home today, as well as my dear friend and one of my great mentors and certainly teachers in the silver world, who is, of course, David Morgan, the silver guru of themorganreport.com, a man who is, as I think about my adventures in the past decade and a half in the silver world, not always the easiest path. And David, you've been doing this for quite a while and a great job of it. So it's a pleasure to have you on in here today, because I did get some questions recently. People watch the channel and certainly hear about silver and gold all the time, but wonder in terms of, I wouldn't say if we get an inflationary environment, I think we've already gotten that, but you know, if that evolves deeper, if we get to hyperinflation, just some thoughts about navigating life and some of the conditions that come along with that. So, David, it's great to have you here today and dig into these things. And most importantly, how are you, my friend?
Well, I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm feeling good. It's good to see you. And it's great to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, I'm excited to have you here. And I suppose real quick, before we get to inflation, how bad could it get? What might people want to do? We'll take a quick look at the pricing on Monday morning. 26.56 in the December futures on gold, and we are up to 31.18, or down slightly as of this morning, but back above $31, which I think is certainly an encouraging sign. And David, any quick thoughts on what we've seen or what you might expect to see as we head towards the election and the end of the year?
Oh, well, going to the metals, I mean, we got the silver futures up, so keep it up there. I think what's interesting is when we hit that spike high back in the last day of April 2011, we came back down, but we actually stayed above the 30 level for quite some time. On this chart, it looks like it's pretty weak, but, you know, I mean, we're going from 1975 to present day. So we actually had about a year and a half where we were above 30. After with the spike, it held above, well above 30, somewhere around 31, as you got the line there. And then it dipped down. You can see if, you know, you squint a little bit for about 6 months, it came back up. And then it hit, I believe it was 29.50. I forget the number. I put out an alert to all my paid people and said, this is the third test on the way down. If we break down below this sell or hedge or whatever, and when it happened, and I called it just in time, people took advantage of it or not, I don't know. I mean, some said thank you, some said nothing. You could see that huge, you know, cup that we went that took years, you know, from that point where you got all the way down. Then we got excited in 2016. I got excited in 2016. We got that big run. Thought it'd back and fill, but no, back down to another low. And then, of course, we got that big move in the 2000 with the illness, and then back down that 125-1, and now we're back up. So I said all that to say this: once we get above that 31.23, I say about 33, you can see there's no overhead resistance. There's hardly anyone ever bought any metal that high, so most people will be at an all-time high, and so they won't want to sell. They'll be holding, so any new buying will put a lot of buying pressure on there. It's like a stock. It's, you think of it like a stock. Stock has got a very tight float and it's making a new high. It doesn't take a lot of volume to move the price higher because no one's selling. So the float is tight. No one's selling. So it'll be the same thing in the silver market. I'd love to see it, you know, above 33. I'd like to see it at 40 by the end of the year. Will we get there? I don't know. Could we get there? I would say, yeah, we could, especially with gold, you know, continuing to make these nominal new highs.
Yeah, it certainly will be interesting. And whether we see that this year or at some point in the future, obviously, as we'll dig into, we had not only a rate cut, pretty darn aggressive rate cut. One last note on the chart here. We see the times that it's gotten above that 30 level has not been often. One, two, had three briefly in 2021, but now here we are. Which that alone is not saying that we're headed to 50, but last couple of times it broke above that. So at least some optimism in the pricing. Although what is less optimistic, David, is obviously the conditions we're facing. like I mentioned, you've been doing this for the 70s, I believe, was your start studying silver. You were, is that
Yeah,
correct?
I
You
was
were
working,
training by then.
in the air compass, but I was always looking at the markets, futures, and all the markets. Started trading stocks when I was 16, and just fascinated, especially the honest money and the sound money. There's really in the early days when I was young. I mean, we talked about the honest money or sound money campaigns, and there was a lot more alliance to silver being money in those days because it'd been in circulation, not that long ago. For example, 71, in 64, we're circulating silver, and then 65, there were a lot of people still circulating silver. It disappeared pretty quick, but they didn't even know any better. They would believe what the government said, that the Johnson slugs were just as valuable as the silver money, and of course it's not. So it did disappear. Anyway, back to you.
Well, I mean, that was a lot of the foundation that was laid, and that things that people were talking about in terms of debt, inflation, that, I guess for a while it felt like we were talking about it. Now we're experiencing it. And here again, everyone's favorite, JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon, yet obviously a mainstream establishment voice. And this was about 2 weeks ago now. And here was the article. And he was worried at a raft of inflationary forces, such as higher deficits and increased infrastructure spending. Hard to see many scenarios in which that does not continue to be the case. So we've had the inflation. The things he cites sure seems like we have a lot more of those going forward. Also saw a chart from the National Bureau of Economic Research that says if we had been using the 1983 CPI methodology, that in 2022, their calculation said inflation would have been calculated at 18%. Even using the CPI numbers, we can see from March of 2020, prices are up, according to CPI, over 20%. So, long intro to the question there. First of all, I guess, do you expect this to get to a point of hyperinflation, or when people are thinking about how to plan and figure out how to navigate the next couple of decades of life. Maybe we could start there of what you expect, and does this get to some of the things we've seen historically?
A great question. I mean, I take it a deep breath because, first of all, no one wants a hyperinflation. I mean, a hyperinflationary depression is the worst of all worlds because the currency isn't trusted anymore. I mean, a true hyperinflation is the Weimar Republic, what happened in Argentina and Venezuela. I mean, there's pictures on the internet. If you've probably seen them, and maybe some of our viewers haven't, but you can Google it pretty quick. And there are literally currencies in the gutters that people won't bother to pick up because it's that worthless. Now, will that happen to the US dollar? I really doubt it. But the trend is, as you point out, stagflation, where you have higher and higher costs, and you have less of a, you have uncertainty. You have a lot of things that are similar to a debt liquidating depression. High unemployment, high uncertainty, costs go up, unaffordability of basics. Food going up, whatever, 30, 40%. As Mike Maloney says, it's not the CPI, it's a CP lie. I mean, they take out food and energy, the two things humans need the most. I mean, what kind of a scam is the government running here, So I do think the trend of higher inflation is pretty much built into now, even though they use all kinds of metrics, this hedonic indexing and all this crap they come up with. But and they are lowering interest rates, and that's very good for the bond vigilantes, the people that trade in the bond market. Does it really help real estate? Slightly, but not a whole lot at this point, unless it goes far lower, which it could, and probably they'll force it. But I'm a bit of a contrarian's contrarian. I think that they are not going to get away with this lowering of interest rates for a very long time. I don't think they could do it for the next 2 years. They might do it for the next few quarters. I'm not sure, but I do believe with the shortages that are built in the market, with the problem with the foodstuffs for the war efforts throughout different parts of the world, and the problems with the illness a few years ago, and governments saying, taking on their farmers and what you can grow and can't grow and why you can and how you have to, what energy source you can use. and all this nonsense that's going on with the technocratic bureaucrats at the top of the pyramid with their AI derived ideas of how to make the planet more green, when it's everything green is almost the opposite. I could go on that tangent, I'll stay off of it. So I do think that you're going to see more and more inflationary pressures, and that they might have to be forced to turn around and raise interest rates some more. The problem is you cannot raise interest rates high enough to do any real good in the real economy unless the inflation rate is, excuse me, the interest rate is above the true inflation. So if the true inflation rate's 18, let's just make it 10 for talking purposes. And the government says it's down to 4. But if it's really 10, you really are not going to take that inflation away until you put real interest rates above the 10. And that happened under Volcker way back in 1980. It couldn't happen again because the interest payment on the national debt would be beyond belief and really couldn't even service the interest, which we're getting close to over time anyway. I mean, we are adding, $1 trillion to the deficit every 100 days. So, it's 360 days a year. So in less than a year, every year we're adding another $3 trillion to the debt. And then something that very few people talk about, but I will occasionally, and that is, what Professor Sizemore and Catherine Austin Fitts reported on, that there's really $20 trillion that was in the black budgets that's never been put on the national debt. So really, we're more like a 55 trillion rather than 35 trillion. And that's the current deficit. That's what you owe on your credit card that you got to make a monthly payment. It's the off-budget items with that are unfunded liabilities for Social Security, Medicare, and military pensions that gets into over 100 trillion. So, I mean, you're really in a situation where we could go into hyperinflation. Will we get there? I don't know, but it's really a psychological event as much as a math problem. And that's where the doesn't have to be the majority of the people. It only has to be a few percent, but those few percent move enough money rapidly enough. It's called velocity to money, where they're spending it faster, as fast as they can, because they're worried about its value being worth less a month from now, a week, a month from now, 2 months from now, 6 months from now. So you don't care if T-bill rates go up to 10% if you think that the cost of food's going to be 25% in that same time frame. You'd rather buy the food and store it than you would to get interest of 10%. And we're not there yet. Will we ever get there? You ask me, I don't know. But the trend is that direction. That's what I'll tell you.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I guess that's the part that concerns me the most sometimes because, especially in the election cycle, I've heard different views of, hey, we could raise more revenue doing this. Yet, if ultimately the thing is run by someone, and no matter how much revenue you have, they're going to spend more. And if they haven't figured out it, they'll find a new way to spend money. And similar dynamic with the Fed, where here, even with the economy, we're told it's strong. Even 25 basis points wasn't enough. So certainly what happens when we do have an overt recession. And David, by the way, I like that the illness of 2020. We'll leave that aside. And although since you did mention Volcker, I had to pull this one up. I've been rereading this for the past week. This was in my fantastic Joe Bannister book, discusses why the IRS mentions the word voluntary repeatedly in their tax code, which probably is just a mistake, most likely. But we had a Paul Volcker quote where he mentions, if the overriding objective is price stability, we did better with the 19th century gold standard and passive central banks with currency boards or even with free banking. I thought that's interesting, where here's almost the king of the central bankers, and even he's acknowledging that, we're in a system that isn't doing so well. And I know I said we're not going to stay too focused on gold today, but one other thing I'd like to pull up before we get back to that is something I was thinking about today, where here you have gold down near 250 bucks, 2000 and 2001. So we've seen gold more than 10x in the past 23 years. And as you have already been describing, we have the conditions that we faced back in 2000 are exacerbated beyond that. You mentioned the missing money. I've heard Dr. Skidmore and Catherine Austin Fitz, they had an updated number even past the
Yeah, right.
21 trillion. I think it was in the hundreds. Seems like they have been. Actually, emailed Dr. Skidmore a while back. Seems this is my own impression that he's not been encouraged to talk more about this by the government. Of course, that would include the missing 2.3 trillion from September 10th, 2001. Yet, nonetheless, obviously, gold. I think, especially after where we are this year, you can see what's happened in the last 20 years under similar conditions that now are exacerbated. So, nice, we're at a point where at least I think it's a little easier to see gold filling its role. But what outside of gold? You talked a little bit about food, which, especially hearing Kamala Harris talk about price controls at the supermarket. I think for anyone who's studied what happened in the 70s, and you've talked about during the Great Depression as well, that's a bit disconcerting. But we'll step away from the gold and silver part a little bit now. Anything in terms of food or other areas? And I know you talk quite a bit about some of these, so what could you share there?
Well, we talked, pre-interview. I mean, the Smoot-Hartley Act was done during the Great Depression. It was to protect American farmers. So they put price controls on, or tariffs, excuse me. And all it did is make the world depression worse. So price controls don't work. Tariffs really don't work. A free market is what works. And yet, this is a well-known fact, but it's part of the historical record. But the As Santayana said, the greatest lesson of history is that people do not learn the lessons of history. So they'll keep making the same mistakes. I fully expect, Trump's for tariffs, Harris is for, price controls. Neither one are good for anyone. But the masses don't know that because they're not taught, and they don't think, and they don't read, and they don't study, and they don't understand. And I get it. I mean, I'm not trying to put anyone down. It's just, most people are out there working two jobs now. I mean, I don't know it's most people, but many people. And they're just too busy making a living, and they're too tired to, look at what you and I discuss. It's people that have saved a little bit and are concerned about what their savings is going to evaporate to in the future. They're taking measures to try and educate themselves. And many have become quite educated and realized that, an ounce of gold didn't change from 2000 to 2024. That ounce is the same. How come it's 10 times, more fiat now than it was 25 years ago? Well, because it destroyed the currency, or destroying the currency. So I think we want to talk a little bit, to kind of circle back, not lead this, but I think we want to talk a little bit more about the hyperinflation. I mean, I think you had some questions for me on, what happens to mortgages. But most people don't know that don't live outside the US or US centric is many places in the world, there are no more. Most of Europe, you have to buy the property outright. That's why so many middle class or upper middle class rent in Europe, because you have to. There is no mortgage in most cases. I mean, there might be exceptions with the private party, but there's no mortgage brokers or anything close to that in many places in the world. South America is pretty much that way. In Mexico, you got to pay full up. Argentina, the same. So people ask, well, what happens to your mortgage in Argentina? Nothing. It doesn't exist. On a credit card, excuse me, on a short-term loan, like a signature loan or credit card debt, when they revalue, they just revalue in the new currency. So you basically pay, your debt doesn't go away, it just gets re-indexed. So I think that's something that you had for me earlier on.
Yeah, and anything, I think you mentioned how they don't have the same mortgage system down in South America. We did have a question someone asked, particularly about Argentina and Venezuela, how some of those things look before and after, and anything that you could share on that.
Well, what happens is, good money chases out bad. When I think a lot, most of our viewers would know, but many that, never look at this subject matter. I mean, the black market, free market in a lot of these countries use physical pieces of paper that are printed by the Federal Reserve. They're called Federal Reserve notes, and they're green with pictures of president. That's the true economy. So there's the bank rate that you could take your pesos in and get dollars, and then there's the street rate, where you can change your pesos and get dollars. So a lot of it goes to US dollars instead of their currency. And when it gets really bad, they'll trade in metals. And most of the metals, and I learned this not the hard way, just not knowing because I hadn't gone through it, but having been to Argentina and these other places and talking to people in the know, a lot of it's jewelry. They'll take a ring and weigh it, see if it's sterling, or a ring, bracelet, necklace, earrings, anything that's silver or gold, they will take in exchange for, another product or service or whatever. So you have the US dollar greenbacks trading with alongside physical metal, and it's not always, shiny, round, government stamped, 1 ounce pure silver. There's in fact, there's a lot less of that. Now, in this country, if we went into that kind of a situation, you'd see a lot more, coinage, because there's a, fair amount of stackers and that kind of thing. But in these foreign countries, a lot of it just is jewelry.
And David, in terms of food, again, touched on this a little bit, but I know there's a lot of prepping channels out there and people have their varying degrees of to what extent they go. But I know you and I have talked about this before. Certainly the idea of not being entirely dependent on the local supermarket chain, but perhaps becoming aware of local farmers, building relationships, similar to what you were saying with gold and silver, perhaps down in South America, maybe going and meeting someone in a local coin shop so that if you do have to sell at some point, you're not ending up in a situation where you don't know the person and you end up getting a bad deal. But some of these things, I think, are also things that at least people can consider, and you don't have to jump all in and have 10 years of food supplied right away. But any thoughts on those types of steps?
Yeah, I think it's really good to make acquaintance, no matter where you are, with any farmers markets if they're in your area, or if you can drive to them reasonably, half hour drive, hour drive even, and then make a some relationships. We have them here, and I always offer them silver, and most, I'd say 80% say yes. Some don't want it, but a lot will. In fact, they know me by on sight. When I come in there, oh, that's the guy that pays us in silver. Hey, you see more, what? So I think it's a very good idea. And I like what you said, and just for the education part, if you are in a situation where you need to hawk some jewelry or whatever, you might be better off just going through a third party, go into a coin dealer. They can, let's say you're going to accept some silver jewelry or gold jewelry. You don't know if it's 14 karat, 18 karat, if it's really just plated. So you could tell the other party, hey, I'll do the deal, but I want to make sure this is real. Let's go into a this coin shop and find out. In fact, if you let me digress for a minute, I
Please.
had a friend of mine on a real estate deal, and we wanted to he wanted to buy me out, and I said, okay, I agreed to the deal. And I won't say the amount of money. It wasn't a huge amount, but it was a fairly good chunk of change. And he wanted to pay me in gold, but it was, mine gold, gold dust. And so I talked to my dealer here, and I said, he said, is it from Idaho? I said, I think so, but I don't know for sure. He goes, that'd be about 75%. We'll figure it out. And my friend was telling me it's like 99%, And I kept my mouth shut, and sometimes I speak up, but it's always good to kind of, if you don't really know, just keep your mouth shut, And we went in there to do the deal. He brought in, these baggies of gold, and he laid them out and put them in the pan, and they shot it with the gun. It wasn't 99%. It was damn near 100% pure. So he poured out enough to pay off the debt, and then I made a deal with the dealer to take that, because they deal with the wholesalers and the refiners all the time. I mean, I've gone in to see people in the line before me. And they would take rounds and throw them in the scrap bucket sometimes. Jewelry mostly, silverware, that kind of thing. But sometimes just the coin is beat up to throw it in the scrap pile. So I asked him if I could exchange the dust for, PAMP bars, I think I did, because it was the lowest premium. And he did. And he only charged me like, I don't want to lie, because these guys know me for years, so he used to give me kind of the family deal. But I think I only paid like 2% to convert it into what would be usable for me, because I'm not going to take a bag of gold dust around to pay off another debt, right? But anyway, I digress. But I think it's important for people to know that in the real world of gold, there are those kinds of transactions. They don't happen every day, but they do. Everyone thinks, well, do I have to have a Krugerrand or do I have to have a U.S. Eagle? Well, you can have gold dust, you can have gold nuggets, you can have gold chain, you can have gold ring. I mean, gold is gold when you break it down.
And certainly think it's good to get out. You don't have to go contact every dealer in the nation, but certainly going, I mean, there's local coin stores in I think most parts of the country, and even stopping by and getting to know someone so that if at some point you do need to sell gold or silver, you're not starting from the beginning. David, next one on here. He asked, when do we go into real estate and when do we rotate out?
Yeah, I think Mike Maloney's answered that as well as anybody. You do the Dow Jones in terms of gold. We do the Dow in terms of gold. It peaked in the year 2000, even though it's making new highs. How does that work? Well, because you've got a constant, you've got a standard, you've got a gold standard to measure it by. So when you measure real estate in terms of gold, when it becomes cheap in those terms, that's when you switch out and maybe not all your gold, but you move from the metals into real estate or into stocks or into a business or whatever it is. So you have to price it in terms of what's the historic standard for an ounce of gold for a barrel of oil? What's the historic standard for ounce of gold in a men's suit? What's the historic standard for it? And if it's a below average, it's undervalued or fair valued or overvalued. When gold becomes overvalued, that's when you would want to swap it for something else, but it's still undervalued. In fact, on the printing press amount of paper versus an ounce of gold, that factor of 10x that we have talked about is really just keeping gold constant, because the x factor, I'll call it's about eightfold. So the money supply on the base money has gone up about eightfold, but gold's gone up 10, so it's slightly ahead of the base money supply, not talking M2 or M3. So we're in a typical inflationary blow-off, but we're not in the blow-off phase yet. And if we get there, it goes back to the beginning of our conversation where people quit trusting the currency, start trusting, foodstuffs, cars, I mean, anything. I mean, when I went through it in the 70s, I was still pretty young, but I mean, people would circulate these flyers. We didn't have the internet, we didn't have cell phones, old school. But you'd see in certain parts of the city where the people pass out these 8.5 by 11 flyers to buy ammunition, guns, cars, gold, silver, anything but stocks, bonds, or any paper asset. You wanted a hard asset of some type. And it's not just gold and silver, ammunition, cars, again, guns, stuff like that. And a lot of people caught on at the end. I mean, we had that kind of psychological move where people started to fear what would happen to the dollar going into January of 1980. I mean, silver was on the move, gold was on the move. And it was very, you could call it temporary. I mean, it made that last big rocket ship up on a parabolic move. And then Volcker came in and squelched the whole thing. We had a 20-year bear market, and that's just the way it is. Even though the inflation, they kept adding to the money supply, so price of gold wasn't commensurate with the amount of paper being printed for the 20 years following the 1980 high. The psychology had been broken. It was when the psychology was this is going to fail, and then the final icing on the cake was a war in Afghanistan. I mean, that was kind of like, oh my God, the world's falling apart. And so that kind of gave the last oomph to the gold market.
Yeah, and I think you touch on something important there, especially with the environment we're in, where I would imagine, especially if someone has a manufacturing business where you can get parts now, that at least with what we see on the horizon, where Trump's talking about 100% tariffs on countries that are de-dollarizing, the same time, Putin recently had a comment about possibly restricting exports of a handful of various minerals and resources. So that's one thing that, when appropriate, certainly people could keep in mind of things that I need going forward, let alone the price impact, but the availability, especially in today's environment. And also with the housing, I feel it's worth mentioning. Obviously, if someone's looking to buy a house now, there's a whole handful of factors that go into that. Yet, the degree to which, if someone has a mortgage at a good interest rate, what would you suggest? Obviously, there's the degree to which, if the dollars are being devalued and you're paying them off later, can be beneficial. Balancing that, of course, with the degree to which someone wants to be in debt. But anything you could say about the concept of paying a mortgage back in cheaper dollars?
Yeah, I think you have to look at it kind of a case by case basis. But I think you've got a 2.5, 3% mortgage. I would hold on to that. The only problem is that at the end of these great inflations, governments can do some really interesting things like tariffs and price controls. Maybe you got a rental property and you're making good rent now, but then they put a rent control on. You can't up the rent, but you get taxed higher, so all of a sudden you got a really positive cash flow, and then a year later you don't because you couldn't raise the rent and your taxes tripled. I know it sounds extreme, and do they triple? Well, they do in some countries. I'm not saying that they would in the United States. I'm just saying to be aware of those things. But no, generally speaking, if you got a low interest rate under the true inflation rate, you're pretty smart to hold it. Another thing on the real estate, I didn't ask, but I get this question fairly often. And it's somebody that's got pretty good savings, that they never bought a house, or they're moving, and they want my opinion on, should they buy a house or not? They got all this silver or something. And I always tell them, buying your individual property, if you can afford it, do it, because it's a price. Priceless item. Yeah, it costs X amount. It's, 500,000, 800,000, whatever the price is. Put the price out of your mind if you can afford it. You can afford it because you've saved the, not maybe not buy it outright, but it's within your budget. You're safe to buy it because it's priceless from the standpoint of that's your castle, that's your home, that's your nest, that's your sanctuary. I use that word because, and what's that worth? And that's worth peace of mind, and can't put a price on it. Now, if you're talking about investment real estate, then I think you want to think about it differently. But thinking about your own place to live, there was a gal over on the other side of the state, and she found a house and she really wanted to buy it, but wanted me to tell her, what the future held for the metals and interest rates and everything else. And I just told her, just put it all aside. If you really love the house, buy it. Make yourself happy. I mean, don't. Hoarding money, I mean, real money, silver and gold isn't going to make you happy. It's really a hedge. It's being balanced in your head, your heart about money to understand it. That's why I did kind of the documentary, on the Silver Sunrise, because we're so controlled by the money powers, because most people can control others with money. But we have to have our own self-control about money, and that's kind of what I get into in this film, because it's distorted for a lot of people. At least that's what my experience has been, where they can never get enough. Well, if you're a billionaire and you can't get enough, you're kind of sick, And there's people that have enough, and it isn't very much in, let's say, relative standards, but they're happy. So anyway, I digress a lot, but I think it's important because I've run into it fairly often, and people value my opinion or they don't. But when they ask, I tell them how I feel about it. And she was so grateful, so I gave her, I didn't, she needed my permission. She could do whatever she wanted. It was her money, but she just felt so much better. Like, like she had this bit of an epiphany. Why am I saving all this silver if I can't use it for something that I want? It's going to make me happy. It's going to make my life better. It's going to give me more fulfillment and all that stuff. So I had to throw that out there, Chris. You didn't ask, but it just was kind of laying on.
No, well, it's a Important thing that I think probably doesn't get talked about enough, especially all of the conditioning around money, and certainly when you hear about things like MK Ultra and the different ways that various forces have spent a lot of time, energy, and resources on trying to shape the way people think. I'm glad that you're doing that project, and we will come back to that at the end here and tell people a little more about it. Although two last ones before we wrap up. The first would be, any thoughts you have on occupation, career choice? Certainly, it's something I remember before when I was making the decision to leave the trading floor, which was 2012. There was part of me that wondered, is there still going to be a New York Stock Exchange and people flipping options around back and forth? And along with that, I mention often that I'm a big fan of Luke Gromen and listening to his podcast and newsletter. And he talks a lot about how the reasons he thinks that we're not only being forced into some sort of adjustment in the currency system sooner than later, but that while that's going to happen, maybe you have 10 or 15% inflation, but if the US decides to or is forced to bring a lot of manufacturing back home, that if you're a welder or a carpenter or an electrician, you might actually be beating inflation just because of the demand for your services. So obviously everyone's in a different situation, whether it's a job or a business they have. But if you had any thoughts or good starting points, if someone's wondering, okay, if we do get this type of environment, or if they're expecting more inflation, anything that you might suggest for them to keep in mind and think about?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, to piggyback on what you said, the trades are underappreciated. So welding, carpentry, any of those, plumbing, a lot of those high, blue collar, how they're usually referred to, skill sets are extremely good because they're always in demand during a, good times and bad times. And there's very few people in the younger age groups that want to explore that type of a career. But even if you don't like getting your hands dirty, you can learn how to weld for a few years. And if you have an entrepreneurial spirit, you can build a welding company where you just manage it. So there's a lot there on that side. On the other side, it's kind of like the Great Depression, fill a need and find a need, fill it. I think the, building websites, writing code, a lot of these stuff that's, AI is taking over some of it. Those type of high-tech jobs, I wouldn't really steer younger people to that. I'd look outside the box and look at, what the needs are and what people are unwilling to do. I just visited, my friend that's working with me, Ted, was here for about 10 days. And a little more than a week. And we went and saw a sapphire mine in Montana. And I was talking to the mine manager, like I always do, and just how many geology students there are. And it's just so few, So that would be one. I mean, there's actually a need for more and more and more and more and more minerals with this push toward everything going electric. And, geez, that means you need more and more and more and more geologists, so mining engineers. So I would look at that. I would definitely look at, what the major majors are in universities and see what they are. I'd steer away from those. I'd see what the lowest ones are, and I'd gear toward those. And always the entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, if you've got an idea, running a business on the web or out of a brick and mortar building or a truck that caters to certain individuals or whatever. And of course, following your passion. If you do that, the money always follows. At least that's been my experience. So that would be my recommendation. I mean, when you're young, at least when I was young, you life isn't as short as some people will tell you. Yeah, it's short, but there's years and years and years. So to do
Long stretches
something
in
you
there too.
love, that you love, makes it like you feels like you're never working. That's an exaggeration. There's days when I'm pounding out the keys and I feel like but I'm so passionate still about what I do that most of the time I don't really think about how many hours do I have to put in a day or when do I punch out because I work for myself. So that's a good place to be, but it's not for everybody. There's a lot of people that are a lot more content by punching that clock and punching out on Friday and not thinking a darn thing about their work or anybody at work for, Friday night, Saturday all day, Sunday all day, and don't think about work till they go back on Monday, and that suits them. So I guess it comes down to my own self be true, but I would look, I repeat, where no one else is looking, like the great Gretzky, skate where the puck isn't, go to where the job, the man looks the weakest or is unknown or not very well recognized.
Yeah, I like the way you phrase that, especially if you write out what you like to do, what you're good at or have skills in, and then match some of those with where you see need in things going forward. And yeah, and also the thing you mentioned about the mining executives, I've had several miners on the show recently that have mentioned that in addition to energy costs going up for the mining companies, one of the big problems is finding labor that is qualified to do specific roles. So, well said there. And David, the last one I'll mention, I had someone write in who was wondering if it's a good idea to buy gold and silver on a credit card if it drops, and then assume the price will go up and cover the interest. I was suggesting that that is in the bucket of things that if everything goes perfectly, can it work out? Yes, but I was not advising him to do this by any means. And any thoughts you have on that one?
Yeah, I've always been consistent too. I'm too conservative. I would say don't do it. I mean, you could do it and it does work out. Funny, another real quick digression. There was a guy I used to do a radio show with early on when I first popped on the internet, and we did it, oh, I don't know, 3, 4 times a year kind of thing. He would buy a bag of silver at the beginning of the year. Well, remember, we had a 11-year bull market in gold, and silver was similar. So from 2000 to 2011, every year over year, gold was at a higher price. Silver pretty much followed that. Anyway, the point was, you buy a bag of silver and cash it out in April and pay his taxes. And so he's buying it, X, and it was worth, 1.5X by the time he paid his taxes. And the next year he'd buy it at, the previous 1.5X, which is the new X, and it'd be at 2X. So I'm not suggesting that. I'm just going back to what the guy asked. But when a bull market, you didn't try and get away with it, but the interest rates are so high on a credit card. I just don't look at going into debt on a highly volatile market. But yeah, it can be done. I would not recommend.
Yes. I think there are perhaps better ways to do that. And with that said, David, I sure appreciate everything that you shared here today. And I know there's a lot of people that certainly look to you for advice. And perhaps as we wrap up, first, you could tell them about the Morgan Report and what you're doing there.
Yeah, we're plugging away. We're still doing the newsletter, of course, and lots of insights you wouldn't get anywhere else. On the top tier cash rich companies, two out of the six are making all time highs right now, and that's in an environment where the mining stocks aren't doing that well. So that does prove that if you pick the right stocks, you can outperform the metals themselves. In both those cases, if you bought the metal at the top of the market in the year 2000, and 11, those stocks are up higher than their highs at that time. And so if we go to the gold, my favorite gold stock, that stock is equivalent to buying, having gold at 6,000 an ounce, and it's at 2,600. So that's how much better the stock has outperformed gold price from that time till now. So buying at the previous all-time high in September 2011, good about that stock instead of gold, that value would be equivalent to $6,000 gold. On the silver side, not quite that good, but better than buying silver at 50. If you bought that, my favorite stock, or one that's making new highs, you would be like equivalent to like a $65 silver or something like that. So it does play in a portfolio if you know what you're doing. Remember, in the top tier, I recommend 70% of your money. So it's not like I picked a penny stock that's doing that well. It's substantial money. And the rest of the 30% goes into junior producers, mid-tier producers, And then rank speculations is money you can afford to lose. So I do it different than a lot. I weight the portfolio. You weight it correctly. You can do better than the metals, but not many are going to tell you that because most of our friends are bullion dealers and they'll tell you buy gold and buy silver and forget the miners because you do better buying the metal. On aggregate, that's true. If you just average everything. But if you want to be above average, you want to go to the top of the class, you want to be the entrepreneur, and you want to make more money, then find somebody that can help you do that.
Yeah, certainly with our $2,600 gold price, haven't seen a big reaction in the mining sector yet, but I think it's nice to daydream sometimes if we go in the direction things seem to be heading, that certainly there is a bull market in the mining stocks ahead. And David, I appreciate that you help navigate people through some of those choices. Easier said than done, although fortunately you're out there, and the link to the Morgan Report in the description field below. And then just the last one, if you could tell folks a little bit, talk before about Silver Sunrise, the film you have here, but anything else you could add to that?
Oh, just watch the trailers. I mean, you know, the subtitle, Breaking Free from the Stress Sphere and Control of Money. And that's what it's about. I've got Foster Gamble that did two Thrive movies. He's in it. G. Edward Griffin, Ron Paul, Ellen Brown, who wrote Web of Debt, Mark Passio, who does Natural Law. I just finished mine. Daryl Anka is probably not going to be there. We just finished Edwin Vieira. Pastor Baldwin is ill right now. We've got some stuff from Larkin Rose in there. And we've got two more on the table that I won't mention they're going to be on board or they're not. We're just about done the filming. So then the hard process of getting, you know, an hour or hour, 2 hours of film and breaking that down to these little segments and making it all fit together like a giant puzzle under the narration, which is already done, is going to be a task that the editor does. But, you know, then there's more trailers than just those. I think if you scroll back up to the top, there's that trailers right there. If you click that, there's a ton of them. And you can go, you can pick out maybe some people that you like to listen to. You know, Foster Gamble, I'm in there now. I just finished. As I said, he picked out a segment for me that is fairly good. I mean, it's all about not just the honest money, sound money, and all that, you know, I stand for, but try to give people the perspective we talked about earlier. That, you know, you want a balanced life, you want a good life, you want to be your best self, so to speak, and money plays a part in it. And it isn't, should not be the driving force, because in my view, it's got too much control over us. So it's more about taking control of what you can control, being happy with what you have. Now, when you don't have enough, believe me, I get that. But we have the ability to, we have more control than we think. You don't want to turn everything over to the big brother. You know, we're in the era of where, you know, if you want to work out, you get a trainer. If you want to learn how to cook, you get a chef. If you want to, you know, like everything is, you know, taught to us or done for us, kind of thing, rather than being ruggedly individualistic and being able to do almost anything. You know, the Renaissance man attitude where I can learn anything, I can do anything I need to on my own. Kind of that attitude about money. And, you know, what do you really need versus this condition that we all have about wanting stuff that, you know, later on, 3 months later, why did we buy this? You know, I don't really need to buy this.
And David, when is the film expected to be available?
Well, if I get the next two guys and gals in the box or in the can, as the expression goes, maybe by Christmas. I'm shooting for Christmas, but that's on my producer, not on me. He's the one that's got to clip and splice and dice and put it all together. And that's at least a 4 month process. So we've got October, November, December, and some of September. So we're getting pretty close to that deadline. I don't know if we can do it or not, but that's what we're shooting.
Well, we'll look forward to staying posted, and whichever month it comes out, I think for the reasons we've been talking about for the last almost hour, certainly a very important topic, and the link to that will be in the description field below. And David, thank you again, and hope this was helpful for people. And if you'd like to see more about the Silver Sunrise, well, we have a video of one of the trailers that's coming your way. You can just click on that now.